Synchronicity may seem like something that just happens. Synchrodestiny is definitely something that must be learned. But this shouldn't seem at all intimidating. So many things that seem to happen by themselves in our everyday lives are actually learned behaviors and responses. Even the accepted nature of physical reality is something that we learn during early childhood. Unfortunately, most of us stop much too soon in our learning and questioning. Mastering synchrodestiny means reopening the learning process at the most basic level. So let's start at the beginning. For thousands of years, and in many different philosophical traditions, a debate has raged concerning the very nature of reality. On one side, there is the point of view that the whole truth about things is available to our senses. In other words, when you look at a table, what you see is exactly what's out there in space and time. It's a piece of solid matter, composed of smaller and smaller pieces of solid matter, all the way down to the level of the subatomic particles. So if you want to know what the table is made of, the answer is wood. If you want to know where the table came from, the answer is a tree. If you want to know how the table came into being, the answer is the name of the carpenter who nailed it together. If you want to know why, the answer is because he wanted to make some money. This is a completely materialist interpretation of reality. I have described it in rather simplistic terms, but the materialist interpretation of reality is obviously very important. It's the way most everyone lives day in and day out. On the practical level, it's the foundation of the world as we know it. We live every minute of the day according to this viewpoint. There is another philosophy which is also very important. According to this interpretation, the world that we perceive through our senses is only a version of a deeper reality. The Greek philosopher Socrates, for example, and also his pupil Plato, taught that the world of our sensory perceptions is a distortion, a mirage, like a shadow playing across the wall. Today, many historians believe that the Greeks were influenced by spiritual thinkers from India, where the idea of a deeper reality has a very long history. In Sanskrit, for example, the word Maya refers to the illusion that we perceive through our senses. In reality, however, what we are really seeing is only a partial aspect of the totality. Because beyond the manifest physical universe, there is a field of energy and information and intelligence that orchestrates and governs the material environment. But this ground state of creation, which I call the conscious energy field, does not exist independently of us. This is a two-way street. We are both transmitters and receivers of information. We are both the creation and the ongoing creators of the conscious energy field. In contemporary science, the debate has continued between these two schools of thought, the materialists on the one side and the proponents of a consciousness-based universe on the other. There are strong advocates of both views. Even Albert Einstein never accepted the principles of quantum physics, which are the basis of the consciousness-created universe and other related ideas. Einstein believed that there was an essential simplicity to the universe which human knowledge had not yet penetrated. He felt that the familiar notion of solid reality could be extended to the level of atoms and even beyond. Einstein believed this truth was only obscured by the ideas of physicists like Niels Bohr and Werner Heisenberg, which seemed to him more mystical than scientific. The German physicist Heisenberg, for example, declared that atoms are not things. And Niels Bohr, one of the most important figures in the development of quantum physics, stated that there literally is no material world at the level of atoms and subatomic particles. Instead, there is only an abstract mathematical description of one. Yet quantum physics has become the scientific orthodoxy of the 20th century, and it has again and again proved its ability to correctly predict the outcome of experimental procedures. Even Einstein did not say that quantum physics was wrong. Instead, he pointed out that it was simply incomplete and that there were phenomena that quantum physics could not account for. There is no need to become involved with the technicalities of this debate, but the insights of quantum physics are at the foundation of synchrodestiny. The idea of a consciousness-created universe is especially important, although it's often misunderstood. The consciousness-created universe doesn't mean that there's nothing out there or that the whole universe literally takes place inside our heads. It doesn't mean that there's only me or that you don't exist or that this recording is a figment of my imagination. What the consciousness-created universe really means is that the physical universe has no material attributes in the absence of a conscious observer. For example, we see color as an attribute of physical reality. We look at the American flag and see red, white, and blue. We look at the grass and see green. But those colors are not really intrinsic to the reality. Instead, the phenomenon of color is a response by the human nervous system to stimuli from the environment. We experience color as if it's happening out there, but actually we are projecting it from in here. Color is only one instance of this, and it's by no means the most dramatic. When the first Europeans arrived in a tropical island in the South Pacific, the islanders there wanted to know how they had gotten there. So the Europeans said, "Well, we came in those ships you see out there in the harbor." And the islanders said, "Those what?" They looked out the ocean, but they literally didn't see anything. They literally could not see the ships because they had no internal software for that kind of perception. So were the ships really there? Yes and no. If you expected to see them and if you knew how to see them, they were there. But if you didn't expect to see them, they weren't there. So much of what we call reality is really a selective act of perception and interpretation. For example, suppose a husband and wife have a newborn baby at home. The wife may wake up from a sound sleep whenever the baby coughs, but the husband sleeps right through it. Both of them hear the cough at some level because there's no such thing as complete unconsciousness, but there's a selective act of attention on the mother's part. She's much more tuned in to the baby than her husband. Her selected reality is simply different from his. As you can see, the consciousness-created universe and the conscious energy field are great subjects for philosophical speculation. But for the purposes of synchrodestiny, there are 7 specific attributes of the field that I want to discuss in this session. These are the attributes of the universe that we both create and perceive, and they are the attributes that foster synchrodestiny. The first principle of the conscious energy field is that it's everywhere and that it manifests itself in everything. There is a realm of pure spirit that exists beyond the field, but in terms of the reality that surrounds us and that gave rise to us, the conscious energy field is ubiquitous. The second quality of the field is that it's holographic. We've already discussed this in a previous session. The holographic nature of the field simply means that all of it is contained in every part of it. Thirdly, the field uses attention and intention as triggers for transformation. But attention and intention can exist on many different planes. There are many different qualities of attention and intention. If your attention is always qualitatively the same, you will always summon the same quality of data from the field. And if you always summon the same quality of data, you will probably come to believe that this is the only data that's possible. You will assume that this is the only data that exists. Suppose you are at a party and you are having a casual conversation with a friend. The two of you are listening to each other and having a dialogue, and you don't really hear what else is going on in the rest of the room. It's just a background hum. But then you become aware that somebody across the room has spoken your name. You faintly hear someone saying, "Oh, she's done this or he's done that." Immediately, your full attention will go to that conversation. Instead of the person who's standing right next to you, you'll be preoccupied with the conversation across the room, and the background hum will be gone too, because you're so intent on summoning that highly selective bit of data into your consciousness. So the quality of our attention and our selective awareness controls what we summon forth from the field of infinite possibilities. Every day we form silent agreements with the people around us about what's possible and what isn't. And out of these agreements we create our so-called reality. But it's a reality with certain well-defined limits, because our attention and intention also have well-defined limits. For example, our attention is habitually directed toward material things because we experience ourselves as material bodies. And fear comes from this because we think this body is who we are, and we know that one day the body is not going to be there anymore. Fear anchors and attaches us to the material plane, and we don't want to leave it. But by changing the quality of your attention, you can experience other planes of awareness. You can summon a different kind of data from the conscious energy field. This is very important for mastering synchrodestiny, and it's also the key to banishing fear. The fourth point, the conscious energy field manifests in different vibrations. All these vibrations can occupy the same location in space and time, yet none of them distorts or interferes with the others. The best way to develop your awareness of this is to sense the ongoing vibration in your body. Because in reality, the experience of that painting is in fact a vibration in your body, in your eye cells, in your brain, in your other parts of the body, as emotions and feelings are evoked. When you look at a beautiful painting, you see the object, but you also feel it in your body at the same time. Make yourself aware of this. When you want to know about a person or something that's happening in your life, bring your attention to the vibrations in your body. See how your body is responding. All experience is in the body. All experience is sensed in the body. There's a very simple technique that can help you tune yourself to your body's internal vibrations. You can try it right now, or you can wait until you have access to a quiet place and a few minutes of free time. To begin, close your eyes and become aware of every sound that you can possibly hear. Just tune in into the sounds. Feel them vibrating in your ears, even if the vibration is very slight. See if you can tune in to the sounds of the street outside, or of an airplane passing overhead, or of someone walking across the floor in the apartment above you. Of course, these sounds are really vibrations, and they are vibrations in your own body that are caused by events in the physical world. Then tune into other vibrations in your body, the rhythm of your breathing, the beating of your heart. Tune into each sensation. Bring your whole awareness inside your body. This is so important because you, the real you, is awareness of vibration. And where's this vibration? In your own body. You are where your awareness is. And awareness is an infinite and knowing connection with the conscious energy field. As you become more comfortable with awareness of internal vibration, you can start to move your awareness in different places in space and also in different places in time. This is what clairvoyance really is, just the ability to direct your attention and your awareness wherever you choose. Right now, you could close your eyes and put your attention on the most beautiful place you've ever visited, or even on the school where you went to kindergarten, or the day you first learned to ride a bicycle. There's nothing supernatural about this. It's simply a matter of attention, awareness, and intention to experience a particular setting in space and time. Because remember, you are where your awareness is. If your awareness is tuned into the sensations of your body, you can always use this as a direct connection with the conscious energy field. If you want to know the truth about a person or a particular sensation, observe what your body's response is. An intuitive person is just someone who's highly tuned in to the finest level of sensation in their own physical body, in their own physical being. The fifth quality of the field is that the field expresses itself through opposites. The conscious energy field creates experience through opposing energies, or at least that's our perception of it, because at the level of the field, these opposites are able to completely coexist. In the conscious energy field, a coin can be heads and tails at the same time. The distinction between a saint and a sinner doesn't exist. Both are part of the same energy field, so at the deepest level, everyone is both a saint and a sinner. All of us are divine and diabolical at the same time, sacred and profane at the same instant. And it's only because we contain these opposites that our experience of life has any meaning. All experience is by contrast. You can't have hot without cold. You can't have pleasure without pain. You can't have up without down. Opposing energies create experience. Otherwise, there's pure bliss, which is fine too. Pure bliss is the source of creation. It's before the opposites arise. But pure bliss is not an experience as we understand it in our daily lives. In order to have experience, there has to be contrast. Sixth, the energy field is sexual. Not in the narrow sense of the word, but in the sense that sexual energy is the creative energy of the universe. In most life forms, that energy expresses itself only through biological creativity, through the reproduction and the evolution of the species. But in human beings, that creative energy has much wider range. Great poetry is derived from sexual energy in the widest sense of the term. Even the Sistine Chapel is sexual energy. Anytime you feel inspired, anytime you feel excited, anytime you feel passionate, anytime you feel enthusiastic, that's an experience of sexual energy. There is a category of yoga that is known as Tantra Yoga. This is the area of knowledge that deals with getting in touch with true sexual experience. But one of the premises of Tantra is that sexual energy is the creative energy of the universe, and that any form of inspiration, passion, excitement, enthusiasm is essentially derived from this source. According to Tantric doctrine, if you combine that kind of ecstatic experience with intention, you can use the power of that experience in every area of your life. There are many more aspects of the field that we could talk about. But the seventh and final quality I want to discuss right now is the fact that the field is constantly transforming and evolving, just as we, as human beings, are also transforming and evolving. We're all very interested now in how that evolution takes place, so we're paying extra attention to it. But even if we weren't, everything is evolving from where it is to the next level. There's no regression. It's continuously going higher. You can think of it as if we're all going up the Empire State Building and we're all in different elevators. Some are starting from the basement and some are already on the 48th floor. But everyone is moving in a shared direction. So even if no one does anything, even if no one pays any attention at all, the evolutionary process is still happening. Despite the many ways in which we try to improve ourselves materially and spiritually, the most important thing we can do to hasten our evolution is to let go of the known. In other words, to relinquish the past. Otherwise, we're not going to open ourselves to the unknown. The more we are ready to open ourselves to the unknown, the more likely we are to accelerate our process of evolution. And so attachment to material things is what really interferes with our ongoing transformation. Transformation is happening all the time. And there are many ways of demonstrating this. For example, you could choose something that you consider very important in your life right at this moment. Review its entry point, the time and the place when it started. Then project forward to the time when it will be absent. Accept and celebrate that transformation. This constant transformation and evolution is occurring in every individual human consciousness, just as it takes place in the larger field. Our consciousness, our souls, are always in motion, even during the ordinary activities of the day. Sleeping, for instance, is a less evolved state of consciousness than dreaming. Dreaming is a less evolved state than waking, although there is a special category of dreaming called lucid dreaming, which we'll discuss in a moment. But the transformation from ordinary dreaming to waking is a step forward toward a more evolved consciousness. Beyond waking, there's a level of awareness in which you gain a glimpse of the silent observer that transcends your ego, the witness that was there before you were born and that will be there after you die. Later in this session, we'll do an exercise to help you observe the silent observer. A still higher state of awareness is the conscious awareness of this observer even in dreams and sleep. This is lucid dreaming, in which the dreamer's participation in the dream is observed by a conscious awareness. When this same slightly removed, detached awareness is cultivated in waking life, consciousness has evolved to what I call the cosmic level. You are in the world, but not of it. A still higher level of transformation is divine or God consciousness. You can see and feel the life throb of the spirit in every object of perception. You realize that everything you hear and see and touch is animated by the full power and wisdom of the universe. This is the level of consciousness that generates synchronicity. It's very important to recognize and cultivate it within your awareness. And the last state is unity consciousness, when the spirit within you not only perceives but merges with the larger spirit, becomes one with it. This is where there's instant manifestation of thought into matter. In unity consciousness, there's spontaneous fulfillment of every desire. So those are the seven qualities of the conscious energy field that I want to emphasize right now. The field is everywhere and in everything. It's omnipresent. The field is holographic. The field uses attention and intention as triggers for transformation. The field manifests as different vibrations. The field expresses itself through opposing energies. The field is sexual in the sense that all creativity and inspiration are an expression of sexual energy. And finally, the field is constantly evolving and transforming, just as the consciousness of every human being is evolving and transforming. In this session, we've spoken about the conscious energy field in some detail. I've tried to identify and explain certain aspects of the field. At some points, this may have been rather like a technical discussion. But for the most part, I've used more or less the same language we all use every day. I've described the conscious energy field as if it were a work of art with its own unique qualities and proportions, like a symphony or a painting or a building designed by a great architect. But many scientists would argue that what I've tried to do in this session is impossible. They would say that the insights of modern physics and cosmology can only be expressed through higher mathematics. But this suggests that only trained mathematicians can hope to get a glimpse of the reality we all are created from. And I'm not ready to accept that restriction. So maybe there's another way of talking about the field that moves beyond simple description but avoids the inaccessibility of advanced mathematics. I'd like to close this session by suggesting three metaphors that can help to illuminate the quantum world. It may be useful, for example, to think of the conscious energy field as a language, or perhaps as a dictionary of a language. A dictionary can hold words that contradict one another, just as the field can contain opposing forms of energy. But the most important aspect of this analogy is that you must put the words together. You may put them together so that they form nothing but nonsense, or you can write a great poem or a novel. It's the same way with the energy and information of the field. It's your intention and attention that allows them to manifest themselves. The second metaphor is this. The field can be thought of as a child, or even an infant, in the sense that it embodies infinite and even contradictory possibilities. I've raised two children of my own, and once I was talking about that experience with a friend who has quite a large family. I asked him how he would describe the experience of raising children, and I was surprised that he found it rather difficult to talk about, because anything you say about it is true. With children, time passes so quickly but it's also excruciatingly slow. They're unpredictable, but they're also very involved with schedules and routine behavior. But the most important analogy between a child and the field is the fact that transformation takes place in a certain direction. There's an evolution, an intent toward growth, and we'll be talking more about intent in a later session. When you watch the transformation of a child over a period of years, you not only see the transformation, you experience it yourself. And at the same time, you're also furthering the process of transformation. This is something else we'll be discussing later in the program, the breakdown of the distinction between an observer and what is observed and the process of observation. It's all there in the relationship between a parent and a child. The child comes from you, but in a sense you also feel yourself developing through the child. If you want to really explore the relationship between yourself as an individual and the conscious energy field, being a parent is an excellent opportunity. I don't see how a blackboard full of mathematical equations could provide any greater insight. Many of us have had the experience of raising children, so I do think that's a useful comparison. But the final metaphor for the conscious energy field is even closer to home. Yet that very closeness can also make it a bit challenging, because the fact is, nothing is more like the conscious energy field than the working of your own mind. In his book entitled Quantum Reality, published in 1985 by Anchor Books, the physicist Nick Herbert wrote, "Is it possible that consciousness is itself some sort of quantum effect? Is human awareness the privileged access to the inside of the quantum world? Can we know firsthand what it is like to dwell in that quantum world just by sitting still and looking inside our own heads?" I believe very strongly that the answer to those questions is yes. I also agree with Nick Herbert when he goes on to suggest that there are two states of mind that we can probably all recognize. The first state of mind is the one that gets us through the day. It's the practical form of consciousness that allows us to do the things that must get done in our personal and professional lives. But there is also another consciousness that is somehow both in and out of our awareness as we go through the day. It is always there, like a silent witness, as we live our lives. And although it seems removed from our daily experience, I believe the slightly distant form of consciousness is really the expression of the source of everything in the manifest world. In other words, the silent witness is the presence of the field in our own lives. To end this session, I'd like to offer an exercise that will put you in touch with this element of your consciousness. If you're listening to this program in your car, wait until later before you perform this exercise. Otherwise, the exercise will require about 5 minutes in a quiet environment when you're reasonably certain you won't be disturbed. Now, to begin, as you're listening to me, close your eyes and turn your attention to who's listening, to who the listener really is. Not the ordinary listener who listens to the radio and the television and the sounds of horns blowing on the street, but the silent witness who's always present. It's the part of yourself that is beyond your mood, that never gets hungry or tired, that is perfectly sober, that is timeless, that is fresh. Be aware too that this timeless presence exists not only within yourself, but also in the space around you. This presence can't be created or destroyed any more than space itself can be created or destroyed. Awareness of the silent witness is really awareness of the conscious energy field itself, the witness that was there before your birth and will continue after your death. Turn your attention to who's listening. You will not hear my voice again until it's time to end the exercise. Now, slowly open your eyes and become aware of your surroundings. Although we've done this exercise in a rather formal way, you can also perform a version of it no matter where you are or what you're doing. Just move your awareness for a moment from focusing on the everyday world to focusing on the silent witness that's always present. It's not a matter of starting the witnessing point of view and then stopping it. It's simply recognizing that this witnessing is already happening, that this silent witness is already there. You just notice that it's already there. This is a very important realization, because this silent witness is the source of all the synchronicities in our lives. To master synchrodestiny, we must learn to observe the observer. By heightening our awareness of the silent witness, we can introduce intention into synchronicity. In other words, we can transform synchronicity into synchrodestiny. And we accomplish this by creating a link between our everyday awareness and the conscious energy field itself.